time to take a listen to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life. Island Life is our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. It's brought to you every Saturday morning by Island, the stockist of Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local gifts, art and clothing. You'll find them in Ocean View Road, Oneroa. Last Saturday morning, Emma Boa-Warner talked to park ranger Andy Spence, gardener James and Colin Bearden from the Artworks Theatre.
I'd just like to say hello and welcome to Andy Spence, local environmentalist, local thespian, singer and all-round good egg. Hello, Andy. Thank you very much for coming in. I'd like to start off with my guests and ask a little bit of how they got to Waiheke, because of course this is Island Life and it's about Waiheke. So, and I actually hadn't even turned your microphone on.
Oh, well, hello, Emma.
Hello. So, tell us a little bit about how you came to Waiheke and how long you have been here.
Okay. I used to be in Whanganui. We were there for 7 years. And
Of course you are a Brit originally.
I'm a Pom.
Yes.
Yeah. We were there for 7 years, but we kept on coming up to Waiheke. We had a friend here, Mark Parisian, and he lived on one of the houseboats.
Oh, really?
So we came to visit him up here, and every time we came, we thought, what a wonderful place this is. And I came back once with my parents, and we were sitting over at Vino Vino's.
Oh, yes.
Having a jug or two. And I looked at Maya and I said, why are we living on in Whanganui? Why don't we live here?
Right.
So that was it, basically.
We just on a whim kind of thing.
On a whim, yeah. We gave 6 months' notice back in our jobs in Whanganui. We said, well, 6 months is plenty of time to find a job.
And sure, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't. I applied for everything under the sun. And it wasn't until actually a week before I got here that I actually got the job on the island.
Right.
So excellent. It was pretty fortuitous.
Yes, yeah. And how long ago was that?
That was 16 years ago.
16 years. 16. Oh, so you're a year in to being a real local then, because it's 15 years, I
15.
Believe.
15, oh, is that right? I didn't realise it was a specific figure,
well,
but there you go.
I've heard numerous numbers. I've heard 12, I've heard 15, and I've heard 20. Now, I think 20 is just being cheeky, frankly.
Yeah. Well.
I think 15, you know, as a middle number. Yeah.
It'll do.
Yeah. We've unfortunately got another 10 and a half to go.
But you're already world famous on Waiheke.
Oh, I don't know about that. Anyway, you live here with your wife and you work on the island, as many people will know. But you're involved in lots and lots of community stuff as well.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about some of the stuff that you do. I've mentioned it briefly in your intro.
Well, at the moment we're pretty busy with the Coral Society.
Yes.
We've got a production coming up this June, July.
Now, is that a funny thing happened on the way to the
That's
forum?
That's the one.
I can't wait to see
it's
that.
It's a very, very funny show.
Yeah. So what's happening with that? Because you've had to put the date back just for people that perhaps haven't read it in the paper.
No, I think a lot of people don't know it. So the people haven't put themselves forward like we'd hoped they would.
Right. What, to be in it?
Yeah, to be in it.
So you're still looking for
We've still
performers?
Got a couple of vacancies, particularly for courtesans in the in the play. So if you fancy moving around a little bit and you're a girl and you'd like to put yourself on stage and it'd be a good opportunity.
Right.
Richard Melville is still looking for people like that. So
right.
Give
Richard Melville a call.
Richard
Do you
Melville.
Know his contact details?
No, or not offhand. Weir's Funerals Director.
That's it.
That's
yes.
Right.
So you could also always contact him.
He talks
him
to the
work.
Dead.
Yes. I believe so.
Yes.
I believe so.
Yes.
So he's still looking for some actors and performers. And I believe, are you still looking for some technical people as well?
Oh, yeah.
Particularly
sound. We need a good sound person this year.
Right.
Because this year we're going to actually do the sound from a soundtrack rather than from musicians.
Ah.
Because the music for A Funny Thing Happened is very, very complex. It's a lot of jazz and quite upbeat kind of music. So
right.
It needs... So we're going to use canned music this time. It would
right.
be quite different. And I think it'll be make the show quite different too. It'll be a
excellent.
Good show.
Excellent. So when are you looking to put that on? Is that June, did you say?
End of June. Last weekend of June, 1st and July.
Right, okay. So that will be on at the Artworks Theatre.
Yes.
Excellent, excellent. And of course the artwork.
And one of the main characters, of course, in the play is a man called Soodlus, who's the slave trying to get his freedom. And the role of Soodlus is played by a man of great talent and extraordinary thespian abilities. Oh. Of course, I play the part.
Oh, I thought that's where we were leading, Andy. Yes, of course. Excellent. So, and it's a comedy? Is it a comedy?
Yeah, it's a farce, a Roman farce.
Right.
Okay. So a comedy, definitely.
Yes, absolutely. So
one involving the audience a lot. We're going to have the audience sort of quite involved in the play.
Oh, excellent.
Sitting around tables in a kind of a, what do you call that style when you sit around in tables?
Oh, God, I should know this. Having studied it. It's not forum. I'm just trying to think what type of the. My partner Darren will be at home screaming out the answer to the radio at this one. Yeah. I can't think now.
Anyway, that's the format.
Theatre myself, and I can't. Yeah, I'm just thinking it's not forum. I can't think. Anyway, it'll probably come to me at 2 o'clock this morning, so I'll make sure I give you a text and let you know at that time.
Thank you. I'd love that.
Great. So and that's the Choral Society.
That's the Choral Society. Okay. So that's going to take up my time for the next 3 months, I think.
Mm, absolutely. Yes. I'd have loved to have been involved, but yeah. Anyway, those people that have heard me sing will probably think I'd love for you not to be involved, Emma, but never mind. So, one of the other things that you're coming in to talk about is we're going to have a little chat about what's going on in the environment and what's going on Waiheke.
Yeah.
So, what are we going to kick off with today?
Well, I think there's two things. One is the weather.
Sure.
Excuse me. It's the driest... summer.
February since what, 1960s or something?
I don't know the figures, but I brought them in here. We've had 4.5 mils of rain in March so far, 32 mils in February, 43 in January. So it's been very little rain over the last 3 months, and that's down the recording stations I've done.
Right.
So things are pretty bare bones out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So your gardens are going to be looking pretty dry if you haven't got tankers of water coming in.
Absolutely. And of course, people are having to fork out for water as well, residential and commercial.
If you've got trees in the garden and your mahoe is starting to droop, that's the first sign that things are going to start dying if you don't give them some water.
Yeah. It's a tough one as well, isn't it? Because I know a lot of people that I encounter perhaps on the boat, commuting or whatever, they're sort of like hanging on, thinking, oh, well, it's got to rain soon. And indeed, we've been doing that in our household, but we had to succumb yesterday. We had to purchase some water, and gosh, it is, the water people on the island do a great job and are, very, very good at delivering when they say they're going to, and the prices aren't extortionate. You know, they're good people, but I resent buying water.
Oh, yeah. It's
really
a sort of an admission of failure, isn't it?
Well, yeah, oh, thank you for that. Yes, I wasn't perhaps going to go.
Well, I feel the same, don't you worry.
Yes, it is.
I had a look at the Met Service forecast, actually, and it looks like there could well be rain Tuesday to Thursday next week. There's quite a system coming through, so we may be lucky. You never know.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the trees will breathe a big sigh of relief.
Flourish as soon as there's some water, because it is getting quite brown. And
even the golf course is like concrete out there.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Oh, and of course, yes, you are. You're a keen golfer, aren't
you? Yeah, a very bad keen golfer.
Like I'm a keen but very bad singer. Yes, we go well together.
We know how it goes.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, okay. So any tips for what people should do regarding water and water saving?
I suppose save your prized specimens.
Yes.
Particularly if you've got any cowrie in the garden.
Oh, right.
Cowrie doesn't let you know that it's unhappy before it sort of
keels over.
Succumbs.
Right.
So give your cowrie a bit of a dose of water as a precautionary measure.
Right.
The only thing you notice is the leaves start to get a little thinner.
Right.
But by the time you notice that, it's almost too late.
Okay. All right. Okay. Let's move on, because actually I've just realised we've probably usurped a little bit. We've got a gardener coming on later on in the show, James Kilpatrick, and I'm sure he'll want to talk more about some of the plants and stuff. Let's talk a little bit about what's going on with the moth plant.
Right. There's been some big ads in the marketplace if you've been looking at those, the big weed busters ads.
Mm.
So there's our yearly go at the moth plant. And we've made big progress over the last few years. You know, I've been involved in Weed Busters for quite a few years now.
Right.
With Jeunesse and Gary Wilton.
Yep, and they're definitely world famous on Waiheke, those
they,
two.
They certainly are. Gosh, what characters.
Yes, definitely.
You've probably seen Gary in his woody weed suit with his lovely legs underneath.
That is stunning. That's a stunning look for Gary.
So if you're after doing your moth plant, now's the time, because it's still got the flowers on it, though the pods are getting big now.
Right.
But if you still cut the plants off from the roots, the pods are still reasonably young. So they've got a good chance that they'd shrivel on the tree if you can't get them.
Right.
If you can get the pods off as well, so much the better, because you can take them down the tip at the moment.
So explain for those people that don't know what you mean. You're talking about cutting down the plant and pulling off...
Yeah, and pulling off the pods.
Right.
Particularly the bigger pods. The tiny little pods will shrivel up if you've cut them off.
Why would you dispose of those separately?
Well, if you don't, what will happen if they go on the ground, they'll just burst. And each pod's got about 500 seeds in it. And so you get this mass of seeds on the ground afterwards. And then you've got another 15 years work trying to get rid of those. So
I think that's what's happened on our section, actually. We've cut them down a couple of times over the years, but not knowing exactly what we were doing, we didn't know to get rid of the first time.
Right.
And we came a cropper with that. We didn't know to get rid of the pods. I should have thought of that, but I didn't.
Yeah.
And so we had a slight infestation, shall we say.
Yes. Well, I've been struggling for 15 years with moth plant, and it's only now that the seed source is just about gone.
Really?
Yeah.
It's taken
so
that long.
Yeah. One year of neglect is 15 years of work afterwards.
Exactly.
But you've got to do it, because if you don't, those things are right over the top of all your bushes. It's a really disgusting weed to have in your garden.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, where it comes from in South America, they went to try and find it, to find out what pests eat it. And it has so many pests in South America, they could hardly find the plant.
Really?
Mm.
Really?
But when they brought it here, of course...
we don't have the same amount of
pests. We don't have
the pests
for it. They didn't bring those, you say.
Yeah, and that's been a huge problem with other species, wildlife species and plants.
Yeah.
That with people that have brought in non-natives to control other pest species, and then those that were brought into control have indeed actually taken over.
And become a pest themselves.
Yeah, and become a pest themselves, and then thereby perpetuating that cycle.
Hmm.
So, I don't personally advocate bringing in other species to do that. I think that's an antiquated way of doing it. So we have to take management of it, don't we? So I see you have some trusty tools in your hands.
I've brought my weapons of destruction with me.
Yeah,
here,
I'm a bit nervous.
It's really simple. All you need is a secateur, which you can cut the plant off really close to the ground. The closer you can get the ground, the better.
Mm.
If you can't dig it up, I mean, if you don't like using chemicals at all, you can just find the bottom of the plant, which can actually take some doing because it winds its way through the grass and around other things.
Right.
And you find the root and cut it off, put the Vigilant Gel on the bottom.
Yes, we've got some of
that good
stuff.
It's quite expensive,
isn't it?
But... they've got a special offer at Placemakers at the moment. I think it's about $10 off the normal price.
And they do that yearly, I've noticed, because we've purchased it yearly, and they tend to, around this time of year, Placemakers are really good.
Yeah, Lee Strickland's been very generous in putting that offer on.
They put an offer on Vigilant. That's you put that when you've chopped the plant down, you put that on the
bottom, on the stump that's still in the ground.
Stump that's exposed.
You don't need to bother about the bit up the tree, that'll just wither and die.
Right.
But the more of the vine you can cut, it stops the pods developing anymore.
Right.
So that can help.
Yeah, absolutely.
And dig it up.
And what if you're not sure what moth plant actually is or what it looks like?
Yeah. The flowers are sort of a creamy white colour. They're not very big. They're only sort of half a centimetre across. Mm. That pinky whitish colour, big mass of them, though they're starting to die back a bit now, but the pods are pretty obvious. They're like chocos, you know, big green pods.
Yep, yep.
And if you scrape the bark of the plant, you get this white sap coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And the only other plant that's a vine here that has white sap is a convolvulus. And the convolvulus has got those big trumpet white flowers.
Yes.
So they're quite different flowers. So if you're any doubt, just give a little scrape on the bark.
Yes.
And it'll bleed white and you know you've got the right thing then.
Great, okay. And of course, the other thing that people can do if they're really, really stuck is to give Weed Busters a call.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Weed Busters are really good at going out and helping and advising people, not necessarily doing the work, but actually advising people on what they should and shouldn't do.
Yeah.
We've had Janice round at our property, actually. She actually came for a coffee and a cake, and she couldn't help herself. She went round the garden, she went, get rid of that, get rid of that, do that.
That
do
sounds like Janice.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think I was on the threat of pain of death if I didn't,
yes.
Or she might report me, or something mean, anyway. She was going to get me. So, yeah, I was out with the secateurs the next day, I can assure you.
Yep.
So, okay, so if people are a little bit stuck on that, then they can, of course, as we just said, contact Weed Busters. And
well, everybody's got a computer these days, haven't they?
Yeah, absolutely. What, Google it?
Google Weed Busters.
Mm-hmm.
And the Weed Busters website's got a plant search on there.
It
so
has.
Just put moth in there and hit search and you'll come up with a picture of the plant and what to do about it.
Absolutely, yes.
And plus all your other weeds there on Weed Busters too.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great
And please
website.
Join. If you join the Weed Busters, then it gives a bit more profile to Waiheke and it helps us to attract resources.
That's right, because the resources that are allocated for Weed Busters are per capita, aren't they?
I have to ask Janice.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. It's something along the lines of the more people that they've got that have actually joined that will that are demonstrating that they're active in Weed Busters, the more allocation of funds they're likely to get. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, certainly the higher profile you get. Waiheke's got the best profile for weed busting in New Zealand.
Really?
So, yeah, we're keen people here.
Yes. Yeah.
You know,
well,
we care about our island, and rightly so. Best place on the planet.
And so we still have the lovely Andy Spence in the studio with us. And let's talk about something that I'm really, really excited about. And that is the up-and-coming Bellbird release.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, I am... Well, first of all, Bellbird, for those people that don't know, let's just sort of put it into perspective. They're a native, a beautiful sounding native bird, aren't they?
They certainly are. I go to retreats down at Te Moata, that's in Coromandel.
Yeah.
And there they've got a huge population of tui and bellbirds. And you wake up in the morning and the tui start off the dawn chorus. And as they gather speed, then the bellbirds start to come in as well.
Oh.
So you've got the two choruses together.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's a delightful harmony they make together.
Oh.
Sometimes the tui copy the bellbirds.
Of course, because they're a bird that likes to imitate.
Mimic.
Yeah, mimic, yes.
So it'll really add to our dawn chorus.
Oh, fantastic.
It'll be beautiful to have them
here. Yeah. I encountered bellbirds when I first went to Tiritiri Matangi, and I went with a biologist there. I was going to do some work with him, and he took me on a sort of special guided tour. And I don't mind admitting this, I was actually moved to tears at Tiritiri. I just felt, it was. I've not considered myself to be a birdie before, but I was hooked. I mean, hook, line, and sinker, big time at Tiritiri. And as I said, I just felt I was. We were sitting in this one particular spot and it felt like we're in the midst of a forest, and we were sitting on a bench, obviously being very quiet, and all of these birds, after we'd sat there for maybe 10-15 minutes, very still and very quiet, all of these different types of birds came around that and they were singing and they were interacting, and it was just amazing, a really amazing experience. I must can't recommend going to Tiritiri.
It's an incredible
highly
place.
Enough,
I really agree with you, Emma. Yeah, that was my. I think that's my favourite sanctuary in New Zealand. Tiritiri. It's so accessible. The birds there.
Yes, absolutely.
As you say, you know, you don't need to go looking for the birds. They'll come and find you if you just sit still.
Yeah, if you go and you've got the right sort of attitude and you're quiet and calm, which you know isn't always our natural way of being, but if you go to that place and you do that, then it's great. And the volunteers that run it, I've had quite a bit to do with them. With
it's a huge network
with their education programs and stuff. And well, this was a few years ago now, but they're just passionate and they're great. And another time I went, I took a group of people and we got one of their guided tours, and it's only $5 a person. And the lady that took us around was just so knowledgeable, really, really knowledgeable. In fact, they did ask me, would I consider coming and doing that? And I was like, yeah, only after about 3 years of training. I don't know anything about the birds or don't know enough. So, yeah. Oh,
well, I saw my
place.
First kokako there after being in New Zealand for 10 years. That was where I saw my first kokako.
Wow.
I've been looking for them on Little Barrier for a week and never saw them, but there they came and saw me.
It is. It's a wonderful place and, great place to
Well,
to
there's an opportunity now on Waiheke with the Bellbird release for people to become involved in the release through the Forest and Bird, because the Forest and Bird are quite closely involved in the release this time.
Right. So let's talk about this release. Let's have a little chat about that. Hmm. So Bellbirds, they used to be on Waiheke, didn't they?
They did, a long time ago. Mm. I actually can't remember the dates, but they have been here a long time in the past.
Yep, so we've got
records. They've been on Motuhee. The last one on Motuhee was 1970, I'm told.
Yeah, so that we lost them here on Waiheke quite some time ago, and that's probably due to the population rising and
habitat destruction, probably too.
Habitat destruction.
Waiheke used to be a farm, basically.
Yeah, of course, yes.
But now we've got so much more bush. I mean, everybody can see the amount of trees there are now on the island, considering what they used to be before. Mm. Even the 15 years I've been here, I've seen Church Bay and Park Point become a forest rather than a farm. So there's a huge amount more territory for birds to live in.
Absolutely.
And of course, the birds need food.
Yes.
You know, they can't live on grass. I mean, there's creatures in the grass, but they're not the kind of creatures that they'll thrive on.
No.
So now we've got the habitat, and also we've done a lot of pest control.
Yes.
There's a huge amount of pest control
and
going on.
And that is the key.
It's a horrible fact of New Zealand conservation that you've got to be a killer.
You know,
you can't have a good population of birds and a good population of pests.
No.
It doesn't work.
And you know, one of the worst pests is one of our domestic pets, the cat.
Mm.
And I know there are a lot of people that really love their cats on Waiheke, and that's cool, that's great, and their dogs, of course. But please, what I do think people should be doing is the cat, the collar, the bell collar, you can get them very cheaply, and it's just a little bell on the collar, and it's like an alarm system, basically, that warns birds when a cat is stalking them. And, you know, because our domestic cats can kill in one night, they can absolutely devastate an area.
Cats will kill because they're killers, you know, and they won't necessarily eat what they kill.
No.
And of course, you may see them bring home one bird, but that's one out of 10 they might have dealt to in the time. I mean, you might ask yourself, do I really need to have a cat, or do I need to have two cats? You know, if you've got three cats, do I really need three cats?
Yeah, I know the argument for that, Andy, but I would, you know what it's like when you have a pet, they become part of your family.
Of course they do, and they're beautiful creatures.
They are, and to ask somebody to, you know, well, you've got three, I think you should only have one. Oh, how would you choose? It's like I'm asking someone to choose between their children.
Well, you don't. I mean, when the cat reaches its end of its natural life, you know, just make a decision then based on the wildlife around you.
Absolutely, and in the meantime, get one of those bell collars.
Yeah. And keep them in at night too, because they do most of the hunting at night.
Of course.
And of course, the birds are most defenseless at night because they're sitting roosting in trees.
Mm.
And particularly, you know, with these bell birds coming in, they're not going to be that used to having predators around them.
Because they're coming from some pest-free sanctuaries.
They're coming from Tiritiri and from Tawhanui.
Tawhanui, yes.
Where they're not going to be meeting cats and rats in the numbers that we got here.
And that's a big point, isn't it? Mm. To make sure that it's successful. So let's talk about when are they coming?
They're due for release in May.
Mm. And where are they being released?
They're being released at Whakanefa Regional Park.
Yep.
They're being released at Rob Fenwick's land between Awaroa and Tematuku Bay. Mm.
So that's interesting. So it's a regional park and then private landholder.
Yeah, Rob Fenwick's put in an application at the same time, sort of in conjunction with the regional council. Also Motuhee is getting some birds, and also a site in Hamilton.
Right.
So it's a sort of a multiple venture.
Excellent.
And it'll be interesting to see how each venture
each site,
succeeds,
yeah.
You know, whether there's a difference.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there will be, because there'll be lots of different factors.
Yeah.
factors involved there. But one of the things that we can all do is to keep our own domestic animals
absolutely.
In.
And do some rat baiting if
yes,
you can.
Yes, I was just going to lead into that.
It's the simplest thing that anybody can do to increase the birds in your garden is do some rat baiting.
So how would you get involved in that? Don't you have to be qualified?
No, you don't. you have to be careful but not qualified.
Yeah.
So the qualification is having some intelligence and
looking it up before you do it.
Yeah, and asking some advice from somebody. I mean, the Forest and Bird Stand at the market is a good source of information for it. They've been supplying bait stations and bait for many years now.
Mm.
Also, the Waiheke Hire Center has bait for sale at cost price.
Mm.
So it makes it a much more economically feasible. But you're not talking about a lot of bait.
Go on. So how would you get involved? The average householder.
The average householder, they need a bait station.
Yep.
And a bait station can be as simple as just a piece of drain coil tube with a piece of number 8 wire through it to hold the bait on. And you can see there, you've got the bait sitting in the middle of the tube.
Yep.
And the toxicity is very low. You know, in terms of human beings, a rat has to eat that whole bait basically to kill itself.
Right.
And so you just have one of these in your garden, stuck usually near your compost heap, but safe from your domestic pets, so
yes.
that they're not going to get in there.
Mm.
I mean, it's take a bit of job to get in there anyway.
It would.
But if your dog's very hungry, it might make the effort. And put it in somewhere where the rats can get to it easily. They love nice little tubes like that, and they'll come along and they'll the bait's chocolate flavored, the Bredeye coon that's sold on the island, and they love the smell, and they'll come from up to 50 meters away to find this bait.
Right, excellent.
So if you've got one in your garden, and try and persuade your neighbours to, otherwise you'll be doing your neighbours' rats as well as your own.
Of course, yeah. If you could get everybody on your street or in the locality to all agree to do it, and the thing to do is to do it at the same time.
Yeah, the best time to start is in sort of August time.
Right.
Because then the rat numbers are low after the winter.
Yes.
And you'll get the rats without having to kill so many, and therefore you don't use so much bait before they start to breed.
Excellent.
If you're doing it now, and it would be good to do it now because the bellbird's coming, you're going to find there's a lot more rats around now, so you get more bait take.
Right. Okay. So that's a really good tip. So maybe people could get together and even if you just do it with a couple of your neighbours, you know, you don't have to be. But the more people that do it in the same area, the more likely you are to actually get rid of the rats.
That's right. The broader sphere of influence you're going to have then.
Yeah.
If you've got 10 neighbours, then you've got a much larger area that's being controlled, and therefore there'd be less bait to be used as well.
Mm.
So you save money by getting other people involved as well.
And then it's just a case of putting on the rubber gloves, taking one of the plastic shopping bags, and I actually got to be quite a dab hand at emptying those tubular rat stations. If you pull the wire out, and then you're going to basically have the rat inside the tube. You don't actually have to touch it at all.
Oh, you don't see the rat. You never see a rat.
Ah, well, actually,
no.
Yeah, right. Okay, well, we encountered a couple where we found them and managed to scoop them up in the tube.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
Normally, I mean, I've been dealing with these for years, and normally I never see rats.
Ah, okay, all right. Perhaps we just had a couple
once or twice I've seen one sort of very slow in the.
Yep.
Wandering home to die.
Right.
But it's not a painful death. That's one thing I've noticed.
Yeah, absolutely.
They get really tired and they go home generally to their burrows and they die in their burrows and, just drop off to sleep.
Right. Okay. Well, maybe we just had a couple of cheeky ones that we're using.
Yeah, it's unusual.
That was at the zoo, actually, where we had a big program there.
You may have had thousands there eating all the animal food.
That's possibly
very high populations.
Mm. Mm.
You want to pulse the bait. That's the other thing. If you start in August, don't do it all year round. Do it while the breeding season of the rats is on and while the birds are breeding. So you reduce the rat numbers to a minimum during the breeding season of the rats and when the birds most. And then you stop doing it for 6 months of the year. Because you don't need to, and also it gives a chance for any of the bait in the environment to die away.
Right. Okay.
So it's kind of the environment if you don't do it all year round. You do a pulse.
Okay.
Do a pulse in the breeding season, sort of
for about
late winter, early spring. 6 months. Oh, is recommended.
Right, okay.
They're sort of stopping in January, February when the birds have hatched their chicks.
Right, okay. Alrighty, well that's great. So that's something active people can do. Mm. So the bellbirds, let's get back to them.
Yeah, right.
I mean, this is all pertinent to
them. Yeah, it is.
So they're going to be released. Is it about 50 on Waiheke?
50 at Whakaneifa, 50 at Rob Fenix, 50 at Motuihe.
Wow, that's going to be fantastic,
and
isn't it?
They're going to be using sound anchoring, like playing tapes of their calls and providing feeding stations to keep them in the area.
Yeah, and that will help them establish territories then, because birds like to know where they belong. And that's right. One of the big things with the translocation, isn't it, of birds, that they don't just
fly away,
wander off, and then they can't be found, they can't be spotted, and obviously...
Can't find each other either.
No, good point, for breeding purposes.
Yep.
What we're hoping is going to happen, or what they're hoping is going to happen, is that these territories will be established and playing those sound
recordings.
Will be
they'll play sound bites of the Tiri Tiri song and the Tawhanui song as well, because
excellent.
They sing different songs in different places.
Yes,
you know, just
do.
Like people develop languages.
Yeah, like we've
so
got
they
our
develop
accents.
Regional accents.
Yes.
Too, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Two so if you've got a bell bird that speaks with a Yorkshire accent, it's probably come from Tiri Tiri, eh?
From Tiri Tiri.
Aye.
Oh, all right, lad. Happen it has.
Happen.
Anyway, how can people support it other than the pest control stuff?
Well, get involved with Forest and Bird.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way. And just phone up one of the committee members of Forest and Bird. And Brian Griffiths is the chairman.
Yep.
And he'll have a lot of information. And Brian's in the phone book there.
He is. And I believe what they'll be asking people to do is to record... Well, usually what happens at the translocation is to record sightings.
Record sightings, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're in any doubt, just go on the net and have a look at the bird and the song, you know, so we don't get reports of miners, you know. Because miners start imitating anything.
They
you know.
Do, yeah.
So
yeah.
Get to know the bird, have a look at the pictures of it. There'll be pictures in the paper, I'm sure.
Oh,
you know,
there
a lot,
will.
There'll be a lot more information coming out in the next few
nearer
months,
the time, there'll be a whole wealth of information, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So that'll be great. Mm. Okay, well, I look forward to that, and indeed
Me
look
too.
Forward to talking to you about it some more another show.
Thanks, Emma.
Later on. So thank you very much for coming in, Andy.
It's a pleasure.
It's been great to chat to you today.
Nice to see you again.
Thank you, and I've learnt lots.
You're listening to Island Life, Waiheke people, events and issues, brought to you by Island, art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac, Ocean View Road, Onirua.
In the studio now we have James, our landscape gardener. Hello, James.
Good morning, Emma. How are you?
I'm very good, thanks. And you?
I'm very well, very well. Enjoying the warmer weather today. Very nice. I'm just sort of... thinking about this month coming and
come a bit closer to the microphone. Even better. Great.
Yep. Fantastic. Yep. So
you're here today to talk to us about gardens, but before that let's just introduce you and who you are. So how long have you been on the island, James? It's not so long, is it?
No, I've only been on the island for two years, just over 2 years. So I couldn't classify myself as a local.
Let me tell you, you'd be in big trouble. We discussed that earlier on.
Yeah.
I reckon it's actually 15 years.
Yes, 15 years.
So you've got longer than us to go. Mm, yeah,
know,
you're stuffed, basically.
I know. So when I'm in my late 50s, perhaps I'll be a local. I look forward to that.
Yeah, I'd look forward to that as well. Mm. I mean, I am looking forward to it.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what is it that you do? Because you've not always been a landscaper, have you?
No. I was a school teacher. I still am a school teacher, but...
You're a defunct one.
Yes, I'm a defunct one. Yes,
ditto.
I've still got my licence to teach, but...
They never could take it away from them. They tried, but no.
That's right. So once a teacher, always a teacher. But at the same time, I decided to take a different career path and chose to do landscaping. And initially, it was for landscape design.
Right.
And it's broadened itself out into landscape design. Design and also construction, and the field as you get into this industry is just huge. you know, you can specialise.
Well, what's the difference? Forgive my ignorance, but what's the difference between... Are you saying that you just went into it wanting to just design the gardens and get other people to do it? Were you a lazy landscaper?
I probably was thinking that, you know, back-breaking work was probably the short-term aspect of it. But I think one of the things I've learnt from my training is that sometimes the best landscapers are the ones who actually are holistic about their work. So they design, they assess the site,
right.
They construct or manage the construction of the garden,
yeah.
And they also maintain it. So that's sort of where I'm coming from in terms of my business, the Green Space Landscape Company, which has been operating for about a year or two now.
Yep.
Really, really enjoy working here on the island. It's certainly there's a core amount of people that I do work with, contractors, and they're very, very reliable and really good to work with. So
excellent. Well, that's what we like to hear about people on Waiheke, that people are supporting each other in their business, and it's that whole sort of act local thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you are landscaping and managing a couple, well, one in particular that I know of, a very big property, aren't you? We won't mention any names because they're very private, but you look after one in particular big property where you've had a lot of exciting stuff that you've done there, haven't you?
Yeah, no, it's been a really good project to work on, and there's sort of varied aspects to my job, and I've really, really enjoyed it. I can't say too much about it,
right? Okay,
but
some of the work that you've done there has been quite varied. But let's talk about some of the stuff that you can talk about then. So you've been involved in doing various projects on the island, and you do the whole sort of managing design as well. I mean, that must be really, really exciting to get somebody to say, what can I do with this space?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's almost, you're creating a vision, really, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. A garden's a really personal thing to people, and you end up building up a really good relationship with people over sometimes... can be 6 months, can be 3 years, you know. And
sure.
There are some other projects I have on the island which have been started out as installations of gardens, and they've moved on to be sort of maintaining and continuing to develop the garden as well. So you are, you know, it's a position that you have to respect, really, because you are basically creating a habitat for them to work, to live in. You know,
right.
You are, it's a real privilege to work with the clients I have at the moment, and probably will have in the future. So,
well, that's really nice. It's a really nice attitude to have. So let's talk about why you're coming on the show. Is that we want to have if possible, have a regular gardening slot, don't we, where we can talk about and people can ask questions about things that are going on in their garden. So to kick us off, what are we going to talk about today, James?
Okay, well, I mean, we're going to talk pretty much about we've talked about me, so let's move on.
You can tick that off your list.
Tick, right. And as many people know who work with me, I do like to write lists of things to do.
It's all right though, but look at that screen. I have my own.
Oh, you have.
Yeah, ex-teacher as well. The boys on the Saturday morning breakfast show were quite I'm not sure whether they were impressed or just wanted to tease, because they do tease a lot. They were like, oh my god, she's got bullet points for each guest.
So we're going to PowerPoint you to death this morning. But no, we're not, seriously. We're going to talk pretty much about the season that has just gone.
Okay. I think I need to make a confession here, James. You are probably aware of this with some of the discussions we've had previously, but the listeners may not be. I am a I'm a garden virgin.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am the sort of person that knows absolutely pretty much nothing about how to love and care for plants. I'm more the, I will get those and they'll sit there in those pots and then let them die, and it's terrible. I don't mean to be. I need to get rid of this. I'm hoping, actually, that from a selfish motive, you coming in here and us having this slot, that I will actually learn learn some stuff. So, if I ask a question that's really obviously silly, I would have liked, if I hadn't said anything, I could have pretended that was purely for the purposes of the radio. But now I've sort of confessed, haven't I, really? So,
So, well, where I'm coming from, I'm not going to baffle you with botanical names. And I'm not going to talk about, you know, hydrophobic soils and all the things that that could drive people away from the radio.
Only kidding.
No, so really we're just going to breeze over and talk about some general things about what you should do each month in the garden. Of course, this is not compulsory, and there's
so we won't be going around and marking them out of 10?
There'll be no homework. But just certainly just some guidance, because when I was, I always find that what people have a lot of knowledge in the garden, and people you do meet in the horticultural industry always give you handy hints and tips about what to do. And
that's what this is really. It's a handy hint slot.
Exactly. And I'm hoping that maybe next time people can contribute, and I know there are some people out there who are very, very good at gardening and maybe a little bit hesitant in coming forward to offer tips of advice. So I mean, that could be something that people might like to do for next time, and I can hopefully paraphrase or quote or share what people have, you know, because they're gold.
Yep.
They really
are. We'll give you contact details for that at the end. So what's going on? Let's get into the nitty gritty. What's going on in the garden at the moment then, James?
Well, I think a lot of people are probably suffering at the moment with this heat. It's so incredibly hot at the moment, and the soil temperature is great, but there's no water for it. So you'll find lawns are dying, and any cool season grasses, they're just dying away. But I mean, be patient, and hopefully next month with the rains, I know they've promised for this week, but who knows? You'll certainly get your lawn back if that's your cup of tea. Some people are lawn people.
Yeah.
Some people are obviously more concerned with garden beds. And I think one of the things perhaps with gardens at the moment is if you keep your gardens mulched as much as possible, even your fruit trees, your specimen trees, try and keep as much moisture as you can around the base of the roots.
And the mulch helps. That, doesn't it?
Yeah, it helps. Organic matter is helps to even feed your plants as well. If you're tempted also, you can use a slow release or more upfront release fertilizer for your plants. If you were to spread that around your garden beds now, and then the rains came, then that would give your garden a real boost before the winter.
Right, and of course you can get that from where?
You can get that from, you know, the normal sort of placemakers, stores, just any sort of general garden fertiliser.
And so you just ask for any general garden fertiliser? You don't have to be specific for the different type of plants you're using?
Just be careful about the type of, make sure it has a balanced nitrogen, phosphorus and potassium balance to it. Don't have anything that's going to burn your plants.
So how would you know the difference? Because say if I went along, I'd look and say there's three or four choices. How would I know which one would be balanced and which one wouldn't?
Well, on the back of each packet you have NPK, and then it has next to NPK it has
what's NPK mean?
It's the different components of the fertilizer. So you know, harping back to a science lesson, nitrogen and phosphorus and K potassium, I think. And with that in mind, you've just got to make sure that, anything that has a strong balance of, let's say, nitrogen, you really just need to make sure that the plants, the leaves, keep the fertilizer around the drip line of trees, for instance. So you sprinkle it around. You sprinkle it around like salt and pepper.
Yep.
It's not something that you throw at plants and deluge plants with.
Right, okay. So you make sure that you don't actually touch the plant's leaves and stalk. You make sure that, because that can burn them, or it would burn them, wouldn't it?
Well, it would in this heat, unless there's unless you have water, you know, to water in your fertilizer, just make sure that it's not too up front, they call it, you know, something that's too strong for your plants. So I would probably think about delaying planting of bulbs until the ground's a bit softer.
Okay. Yes, it is really hard to plant here on Waiheke, isn't it, with the clay?
It is. It's like a rock. People do call Waiheke the rock, and I think that's the reason why it's called the rock. In terms of gardening, it's you know, if you live on a ridge, you know, you're planting. It must be delayed until later on in the year.
Right, okay. It's a matter of using a bit of common sense as well, not to go down to placemakers or to a nursery and spend a few $100 on plants and then plant them at the moment, because you need to wait until there's a bit more moisture around.
Absolutely, unless you want to have like a short shower at home, you know, you're... if you're on tank water and that's all you have is one tank for your house, and you buy a number of plants and then put them in the ground, and you know, you have to literally water them every day for a week, and you know, that can be really taxing on your water tank.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, I've been working with one of the ladies of the community gardens, and it's really hard at the moment to manage to get enough water, and she's a lady living on her own, and she's already had to buy two lots of water in purely for the community garden. So it's a really, really big deal, and some people have huge gardens as well that they need to look after. So it's a case of just sort of being conservative at the moment, and of course it's simple things, isn't it, like a bucket in the shower.
Yeah.
If you haven't got something that collects your grey water, I was talking about this with some friends last week, and we discovered that we all have buckets in the shower, and we actually use ours for our toilet afterwards, but they use theirs for the gardening, which is great.
Well, it is good as long as it's not too heavily soaked. You know, it's a wonderful idea. And if you are to, you know, if you want to think long term about your garden, and in terms of getting proper irrigation during the winter, during the summer, then grey water systems are very, very useful. So. And there's something that perhaps we could talk about another time. But
Absolutely. Yeah, maybe we could talk about that next month. So anything else for this month that we need to have a look at? Did you have a plant of the month, James?
Well, I do have a plant of the month, but just thinking about the vegetable garden, I know a lot of people do vegetable gardens. And I'm just thinking that this month would be a jolly good time to think about your... to sow your onions and broad beans, and if you are one of those people who like the roast dinner, then maybe planting.
A good roast dinner.
So planting the cabbages, the cauliflowers, and the broccoli are something you could add to your roast potato.
Right. Yeah. So it's a good time to do that now, is it?
Well, if you've got a raised bed, for instance, you know, and you've again, water is paramount. So, you know, that's something you could maybe think about towards the end of April. So we are talking about April, not this month. So month, I feel, has been a little bit of a
hiccup month,
a drought. You know, 1959 was the last time that this was so dry. I think you can sort of start from scratch next month, and hopefully with more water you can do more.
I watched a really interesting program the other night, you know, one of those sort of late night gardening show. I don't know why but I did. Probably in preparation for this, actually. They did this really great sort of piece on how to cheaply make your own vegetable bed, which I know probably most people know all of that stuff, but I didn't particularly. And I will say I'm quite moved to to make my own now and to get there. So, but I was thinking, oh, I've probably left it too late for this year. But now that you're saying, actually, no, you could plant broccoli, cabbage and cauliflower.
Yeah, well, you can sow your onions and broad beans and plant. Ooh. So when I'm talking sow, it's about starting from the small seedling type size of... sometimes they call them POLs, plant online. So they're just little, tiny little cups you can get, and you just bloody plant them in from seed. Sow from seed, plant, and hopefully your cabbages, if you have planted your cabbages and your broccoli and what have you, they're ready to be planted into or planted into a larger space.
Wow. Yeah, do you know, I might give it a go. I might. It's definitely worth doing, isn't it? And just experimenting.
Well, that's the thing about gardening is there's never going to be a point, I think, for me personally, where I will know everything about gardening. It's just a continual learning process.
And, absolutely.
You know, and certainly it's something that it's wonderful. It's a wonderful occupation, or it's a wonderful hobby.
Yeah. You know? Well, do you know, I'm actually quite jealous when I hear lots of my friends sort of that go, oh yes, and I was doing this in the garden and I'm doing that, and I think, that actually sounds quite therapeutic and quite relaxing thing to do. And how exciting. And then I've got another girlfriend who is just with her teenage daughter, just they planted some stuff a couple of months ago. Now she is somebody that I would never have thought would have done this. She's another pommy that's just come over the same time as we did, sort of 4 years ago. And if you told me, like, even 2 years ago that she'd be planting and growing her own vegetables, I'd have laughed you out of the place. But anyway, she's done this, and she rang me up the other day to go, we just had a dinner with all our own vegetables, and she was so excited. And I thought, do you know, if she can do it, I bet I could do it. And I bet everybody out there that maybe has thought, I'm not so sure. I think it's not, like you say, it's not something that you'll necessarily get right straight away.
No, it's
something you can
trial and error.
Experiment with. And that thing that you mentioned as well about people being helpful, that is so true. People always want to give you some tips or some advice. Or if you ask, I mean, you know, you could be stood in the queue at the supermarket and just, you know, turning around to people and, you know, are you growing tomatoes? Or how did you do it? You know what I'm trying to say is that everybody, that's one of the beautiful things about Waiheke that I love, is that whole sense of community.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I grew up in a small community myself. And I really enjoy the almost the same type of situation I have here now, and I'm sure there are other people who that's why they're here.
Yeah,
you know?
For sure. Okay, so
I was thinking of something else to say this morning, and I thought, plant of the month.
We did discuss this morning, and yes, I fully endorse. Let's have drum roll. Plant of the month.
Well, plant of the month is probably one that we see a lot of. And as I walk the dog in the morning, my lovely Lola. Yes. I look at gardens, not in a nosy way, but I just see specimen trees around the garden. I can see that plants that love wet feet and they also love dry conditions are something that, you know, you might need to think about on Waiheke if you are starting a garden, if you are on holiday here and you have a holiday home and you leave and you want it to be still alive when you come back.
Of course I hadn't thought of that, because we do have a lot of people that are in that situation. Go on then, so what is the plant?
The plant of the month is the Cordyline australis, which is also known as the cabbage tree, and it gets its name from the cabbage tree because the Māori used to actually eat the parts of the tree, not necessarily the leaves or the trunk, but I think more of the roots. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's sort of where that name comes from. I mean, it doesn't look like a cabbage, but perhaps it was sort of that's the way the name was carried. I really do think this plant is a wonderful plant to have, because it loves the wet. If you have a property down the bottom of a driveway, it's certainly something that's going to get a lot of a lot of water, and
right.
And then during the summer when it's established, it just keeps on going. I have one in the middle of my garden, middle of my lawn, in fact, and it just seems to be quite happy. You can get them in different colours. They don't just come in green. They have a variegated yellowy type hybrid version of the quarter line. And picking up on the last segment of the show, they also attract native birds.
Excellent. So double whammy for your bird.
Absolutely. So that's the quarter line Australis.
Right.
They're everywhere around the island.
Uh-huh.
And you can even try and, try and take a self-seeded and plant on yourself. But they do like to be planted in a rather large root ball.
Right,
so,
okay.
And again, if you're going to be tempted to do it this month, then I suggest you plant it,
in a
pot,
yeah.
And maybe wait a little bit until things dampen down a
sure,
bit.
Sure, sure. Okay, well, that's great. So that's the cabbage tree.
Mm-hmm. Cabbage
and
tree.
What's the Latin name again?
Quarterline australis.
Quarterline australis.
Yeah.
I want to go australis.
Australis.
But I won't.
Yes.
I won't do that.
That's forgive
great.
My Latin.
No, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, thanks very much for coming in, James. It's
no
been
problem.
Great to chat with you.
Yeah,
and
it's been really
one
good.
Of the things we're going to do is we're going to try and get some questions for you for next time.
Hmm.
So if people that are listening have any questions for James, doesn't matter how silly they think they might be, big or small, then please do email me, and email studio@waihikiradio, waihikiradio one word, .org.nz. That's studio@waihikiradio.org.nz. And also, if you go onto our website, if you can't do it that way, then you can find our contact details again. If you have anything you want to ask about your question, or indeed, as James rightly said, any tips that you'd like us to pass on, if you think there's something in particular that you found out it could be just pertinent to something that works really well on Waihiki or that doesn't, then indeed we'd be really interested to hear from you on that as well. So once more, thank you very much for coming in, James. It's been a real pleasure. Welcome to the studio, Mr. Colin Bearden.
Hi, Emma.
Hi. And Colin is the current chairperson of the Artworks Theatre Society, are you not? Amongst other things.
That's right. Yeah, I wear that hat.
You do. So how long have you been living on Waihiki, and what's your connection with Waihiki? How did you end up here? Another palm we have on the air now.
Okay, how did I end up? I've been here about 5 years.
Mm.
Why did we come here? I think the first time we came here was for a jazz festival about 6 or 7 years ago when it used to tour around the island.
Right. Because, of course, you've lived in New Zealand a lot longer
than
that.
Yeah, we've been in New Zealand since 1980, but we've been out of the country a fair time since then. But we came over here for one of the old-style jazz festivals that move around the island, and we just thought it was what a wonderful place. And so when it came to retirement, there really was no other place to come.
Really? It grabbed you, had it?
Yeah.
I didn't realise you'd only been here 5 years. So, in fact, we... because we met you when we'd first arrived. In fact, we answered an ad in the Gulf News. We bought, or a marketplace, can't remember which, we bought our dining table from Colin and his wife, Christine.
I hope it still works.
Do you know, it does. It does. And we were really impressed when we went around this garage sale, and these very kind people went, you've not got a... We'll bring it round to your house. Don't worry about it. We'll drop it off. And therein started a friendship. But I hadn't realised that you had only been on the island yourselves at that time, about a year, because that was 4 years ago. So anyway, so you and your lovely wife, Christine, have retired onto the island.
Yep.
But you don't just sit around and do nothing.
No, I say I'm so busy in my time, I need an assistant.
I know. Don't look at me. Yes, I think you have Christine for that. She's your willing and able assistant. And one of the hats you wear on the island is that you're the chairperson of the Artworks Theatre Society. Now, The artworks has a very mixed past, I don't think you'll mind me saying.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
When we first came to the island, my husband and I, I got involved with Waiheke Festival players, and we did some Alan Bennett pieces, and it was already organised and stuff. And I was just so impressed. I literally had got off the boat and somebody was like, would you like to audition for this? And so I did. And anyway, the point I'm trying to make is that it seemed at that time, because I was new and fresh, oh my god, there's this ready-made theatre and facility and these groups that are doing all this fantastic kind of stuff. I want to get involved. And then it all just sort of flopped, you know, a bit like a cake sinking in the middle.
Absolutely.
It just sort of seemed to disintegrate. Would you say that was a fair comment?
I think that's absolutely correct. And it must be about 2 years ago, just over 2 years ago now, where it was almost a desperate meeting, I remember going to, and everyone was sitting around saying it's not economically viable, we can't keep it going, etc., etc. And well, a group of people came together and said, we're going to give it a go anyway, we'll give it a go. And when we looked around, I mean, it was little more than a village hall, really. The equipment in there was in a pretty bad state,
and
it had been handed on, it wasn't standard equipment, bits had been borrowed and not brought back.
Yeah, I mean, it had been good in its time, you know, yes, you're right.
Yeah, but it just wasn't functioning. It was functioning as a hall, but not as a theatre. Yeah, so our first task was to turn that around, and we said it would take 18 months, and it did. And we did all kinds of stuff, like bringing in a new sound system, new lighting system, a comms system up to the tech room, sound dampening in the auditorium, and then new seating. And the whole lot cost over $40,000.
Wow.
And we raised that in 18 months. And that was kind of necessary, but it wasn't terribly exciting because nobody outside saw anything happening. But now we're in the situation where we're just beginning to open it up again and get more shows, well, more events going on there. Mm. That's our next priority. So it's going to take about 3 years to get it back on, really on its feet.
A further 3 years.
No, 3 years altogether.
Right.
We're two years into it.
So you think that this next year is really when the community, the people of Waiheke, are actually going to see the change? Because as you said, what's been going on has been quite... It's always the same. When you're building the infrastructure for something, it takes some time.
Right.
And it doesn't look necessarily, unless you're directly involved, unless it doesn't look like there's much happening perhaps to those outsiders.
Yeah.
But
in
fact, what you have to get that right to be able to build on it and to, in this instance, to bring in the shows, bring in the people and bring in the audience.
Yeah, that's true. But I think people have also got to recognise that, you know, people see artworks and they see the art gallery and the cinema and the theatre. And, yeah, the art gallery and the cinema can put on things all the time because people produce it somewhere else and they just deliver it to show.
Yes.
The theatre's not like that. The theatre, you have to develop it in the theatre. So of all the people that use the theatre in a year, only just over half are audience. The other half that come in are people who are doing their workshops, they're learning about it, they're doing courses. So,
you know, that's a very good point.
You know, for every hour that something's on stage, there's at least 10 hours have gone into preparing for that.
Oh, absolutely.
So
I can vouch for that.
It's always the stage with theatres. You go to other towns and you go along to the theatre. It's closed up in the day. You think, what do these people do? It's closed.
Yeah.
But there's a whole activity going on inside.
Yeah. It's just not open necessarily to the public.
It's open to groups if people want to join up for the, you know, drama ability courses or the youth theatre and all these things that we're doing. And we're getting increasingly number of people doing that.
Absolutely, I was saying when it's shut, looks like it's shut during the day, I'm thinking sort of regional theatres that people may go past. But from our perspective, from the artworks, there is... it was the AGM for the Artworks Theatre Society last night, and I attended. And I attended really just to show my support for a theatrical venture that's going on in that the artworks itself as a venture. But I have to say, Colin, that I was blown away actually by when your lovely person that manages things, Dee, was was talking about what has actually gone on in the theatre for the last 12 months. And she read out much of what had happened, and indeed what is booked in to come for this the rest of this coming year. I could have fallen off my chair. I was really, really impressed. And actually felt a little bit guilty. Felt a little bit, oh, I wish I'd known that was on, or I wish I'd realised, or I wish I'd paid a bit more attention. And I think that might be something that... that perhaps other people on the island are feeling as well, in that it's kind of gone out of people's mind and out of people's sort of it's not in the forefront anymore. And I believe that's something that you're really acutely sort of aware of and are dealing with. And how do you think you're going to be dealing with that?
Well, I think there's two things. I mean, we're very aware of that, but when you come in and things are in a low state, you've got to have priorities. And our first priority was to raise the 40,000 to get it working, which didn't leave anything left for advertising.
Sure.
So we had to advertise by word of mouth and whatever. This year we've got a budget for advertising, so we will be advertising regularly every week in Gulf News. So people will know what the forthcoming programmes are. They'll get used to seeing us. And this is part of our climbing back as a service for those who just want to come along and watch shows.
Great. So that'll be a weekly ad, so that everybody will get used to seeing that the Artworks Theatre is, there is stuff going to be happening. Well, you're hoping for, at least during the winter season, to have a show or some performance every Saturday night, is that right?
We would certainly like to do that.
To build up to it, perhaps?
We have a... Well, no, we're not going to build up to it. We're going to go for it.
Wow.
Because that's what we do.
Excellent.
It's probably for a trial of, say, 4 months.
Yeah.
See if we can fill a four-month programme of every Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
It could be anything from a visiting professional group who come and charge, the $20, $25 down to, a local group that want to do a fundraiser or something. We don't care what it is, but...
We will do everything we can to create a full program.
And we're certainly looking for people who would like to fill that slot. It's a very easy deal. You come along, you just tell us you want to come along, and you put on a show, and whatever's taken on the door is split 50-50 between you and the theatre.
If
only 10 people come, well, you haven't lost anything.
You won't be charging an hourly rate for that.
And we promote that, and we will advertise it in our regular weekly starting Gulf News.
So it's
a very good deal for anybody on the island that wants to start out, wants to put together a show, or wants to do a fundraiser.
Yes.
You can't lose money. You can't lose money doing
which is a big thing when you go to look at sort of booking a space or something. It's like, how many people might come? I can't tell. I don't know how it's going to happen. So that's great. So that's basically, nobody can lose money for that. No. I think that's a great idea.
It's the kind of support that we think. You see, I mean, the theatre is very much associated with the building there, but it's not really about the building. It's about the community and how we can support the community. It's about, a lot of people are trying to make a go in performance.
They might be musicians,
they might be dancers, they might be actors, whatever. And it's pretty hard, because if you go to council or Creative New Zealand, if you're not an organisation, they think you're only in it for the money. So you're classified as commercial, and they expect a whole structure. And the great thing about Artworks now is it's got that structure. It's got audited accounts, it's got insurance, it's got those things. So it's a kind of umbrella that... people who feel a bit vulnerable at that stage of their career where they're a bit vulnerable can come and work within us. It can be at Artworks, it could be somewhere else, it doesn't really matter.
So it could be an Artworks sponsored show.
It could be an Artworks sponsored show, because our constitution doesn't tie us to that building at all. I mean, it's not about the building, it's about developing the performing arts in our local community. That's what we're there for.
Excellent. That's fantastic. So I think a lot of ears will be pricking up at that concept as well, sort of coming in doing the Saturday night shows and also the potential for Artworks sponsored shows. So talk to us a little bit about some of the programmes that are already in existence. You've got a Dramability, some youth theatre going on?
Well, the Dramability one, which is Cindy Peterkin's been running for one term already around the island, she's bringing that into Artworks, because it really needs a theatre context to develop. So she's moving that into Artworks as from the second term, which starts in a few weeks' time, and she'll become a permanent part of Artworks.
Right.
So the programmes she does for younger children will become part of our Artworks Youth Theatre. because to date the Artworks Youth Theatre has been a vacation programme, but this is a term time programme that we're bringing
in.
So we will actually have something for young people all through the term time and through most vacations as well. We'll have
an
intensive school. So,
and different age groups at different times.
Different age groups at different times. The one we run over the summer in January time is usually about 9 to 14 year olds.
Yep.
And that's about 27. We've done that twice. It's been very successful.
I believe so, yes.
And we're now going to do a more experimental one in July, which is for 15 upwards.
Great.
And upwards is as high as you like, you know. That's entirely up to you to interpret that. But it's much more about living in the world of new technologies, of mobile phones and digital cameras and projecting images and sending them around.
Oh, wow.
It's still about acting. It's still about acting very much.
But with a multimedia theme.
In that world. Mm. And so in the world of television, in the world of new media. And how do you retain and develop your skills as an actor or an actress within a world of new media rather than just one where you're up on a stage with lights, you know, because this is the world that, that people live in.
I mean, there's all sorts of things being put up on the internet. YouTube, for instance.
You know,
there's all people putting on little pieces of theatre, performance, art, all sorts of stuff on there. Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anybody of any age, we say 15 upwards, I guess if they were younger, we wouldn't probably. But we're kind of indicating that it's...
slightly
more adult group that we want to try and touch base with. And then later on this year, we hope to be putting on courses, again, you know, young people particularly, but anybody could come along to learn about lighting and sound, how to set up a basic sound system, how
Fantastic.
To put up a basic lighting system,
yeah.
and then possibly to find paid employment in the theatre for lighting shows once they've been trained. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. that's
great. Those are the kinds of things that we're trying to
Sure.
To
and
develop.
Then, of course, there's some of the visiting productions that happen as well, and the Choral Society are putting on... Funny thing happened on the way to the forum. So it's very, very full, isn't it?
It is full at the moment. It's quite difficult even to have our own meetings there.
Yeah. we're
so squashed for space for even to get the theatre ourselves.
Right.
Well, that's great. That's a problem you like having.
Excellent.
But
the
daytime's not so much. So if there's anybody out there that wants a venue for a daytime event, particularly one that's got blackouts and so on, come and talk to us, because I'm sure we could negotiate a
deal
lower rate for daytime.
Yeah. That'd be great. Okay. Mm. So it's really you've taken it and you've shaken it up, and good things are starting to happen, and indeed are already happening. Now, what's the situation with the whole lease thing and, well, the whole thing with the Super City and with the complex changing? Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but just talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Well, the lease thing, we're still negotiating over the lease. I don't foresee any long-term problems, but we're talking to council. I think the one of the interesting things that from what the Transition Agency's document he put out a couple of weeks ago is that the theatre will cease to be under the Auckland Council and will come under the local board in November, providing that's not changed, which means that our local board on Waiheke will need to develop some kind of arts policy.
Yes.
And that's something that it hasn't really had to do in the past. And I think that that is a real good opportunity for people in the community that feel strongly about the arts. And you know, it's not just part of the social fabric, it's part of the economic fabric of the island
absolutely.
As well. People want to make a living from this as well.
Yeah.
So we do need to have some kind of serious discussions about how this can be supported at a community level.
Yeah, proportionately, sort of, Waiheke as a community has a quite a high artistic sort of population, if you like, if you want to coin it in those terms.
The number of venues, 8,000 people. You go to many places in New Zealand with 8,000 people. They wouldn't have a theatre. You'd be lucky if they got one performance venue.
Yeah.
We've probably got 15 on the island.
Wow.
If you think about it, all the places you could put on a some sort of music show.
You know, I almost feel like we shouldn't talk about it too much, because then everybody will want to come here. But then, you know, how selfish is that?
Well, it's like they come buy their tickets, that's okay.
And then can go again. Because they block up our streets. No, sorry, I'm only joking. Well, sort of. Yes.
No.
So, we've got a whole, I've used the word earlier, but we've got a wealth of performance spaces and artistic people that need need somewhere to sort of have their to have their yeah. Their venture go forth kind
that's
of thing.
That's right, yeah, mm. And to meet others and to learn from others and
exactly
you know, all those sort of things. That,
yeah, and
that's,
and that's all about community.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I go on about it a lot, but that is just one of the most amazing things about Waiheke is the sense of community. And I feel that as a commuter, and personally, I lost not just because I was a commuter, but because I was involved in a quite a different type of job, a pressure job. I lost sight of that for a couple of years, and I feel that I've rediscovered that in the last sort of 3 or 4 months. And God, it's just a real privilege to live here, isn't it? And
it is.
I don't want to go all soppy on you, Colin, because he's looking worried already as we speak. But it is a great place to live, and I think artworks could really be, and should be, a real centre for the community, a real sort of central point, if you know what I mean.
We don't. There's lots of things that will go on that will have nothing to do with artworks, and that's
sure.
actually fine. But yeah, as a centre for consciously the community, trying to develop new generations to take people to different skill levels, get involved with others in a kind of more cross-cultural or cross-discipline kind of way, I think it can play a really important role. And as I keep saying, it's not just for ourselves. It's not just a personal development. It's about the community of the island and also the economy of the island, because we know that visitors come here for cultural events as much as they come
and
for
they
the
bring
environment.
Their fat wallets.
And we've got to start thinking about are we open when they're here? You know, are
sure.
we putting on shows when the ferries are here?
Yeah.
Rather than putting them on when everybody's gone. You know,
that's a good point actually.
Could we be doing more particularly over the summer if it's not a particularly good day? You know, we could probably fill the theatre in at 2 o'clock in the afternoon if the weather turned bad in the summer. But, you know, nobody's thinking of doing that.
There's
opportunities
there are,
for people who want to put on shows and make a bit of money from their shows. There's opportunities to do that.
Right. Okay. Yeah. That's great. And one of the big things that I want to say about it is that the artworks needs Waiheke community behind it,
yeah.
And yes, it has gone out of the sort of public consciousness for a wee while, to some extent, not completely, because it's still kept going. It's never stopped. It's always kept going. But I think that it's really up to us as part of the community or as members of the community to support our artistic ventures and our artistic people on the island. And one of those things is to do that is to actually go along to the shows, to go along to the activities. And if you don't want to get involved and be part of it yourself, if you do, great. But to go along and be part of the audience, go and check things out. Stop thinking that, and I've been guilty of this myself, that to go out to a really great show in town, to go and see a really great show, you have to go over the water and go to town. And I think that it's really, really important that... that people stop that kind of mindset. I mean, there are some great things that go on in town, no doubt, but equally there are some great things that are happening on the island, and so it's up to us as members of the community to support our local artists. Okay, preaching over.
Good one, Nero. Good one.
Okay, well, thank you very much for coming in, Colin.
Okay.
As
Thanks,
always,
Emma.
It's a joy to speak with you, and I believe you may be in on next month on my show with a different hat on, where we'll be talking about the UNESCO biosphere.
Yeah, I'll be happy to do that.
Great, mm-hmm. Thank you. See, I've just coined him in there now. Okay.
You've been listening to the interviews from last Saturday's Island Life, our weekly magazine show focusing on Waiheke people, events and issues. Island Life is brought to you every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, and the interviews are replayed on Wednesdays at 7 o'clock. They're also available as a download from our website, www.waihekeradio.org.nz. Island Life is brought to you by Island, the shop with Waiheke's most eclectic collection of local art, craft, giftware, clothing and bric-a-brac. Island, Ocean View Road, Onirola.